Africa of the future.
Africa of the future.
It is Tuesday, the 28th of June, 2022. It is after 8 a.m. Central African time. Hello and welcome to the final episode of Africa of the Future. Yes, final episode of the show. You're listening to Channel Africa, where we continue to give you news, views, and interviews from an African perspective. This is a program aimed at interrogating how this glorious continent is faring in achieving the objectives set out in the African Union's Agenda 2063. My name is Luyanda Maume and I'm your host. We have a great show lined up for you today, and remember, you can find us online on www.channelafrica.co.za, on channel 802 on the DSTV audio bouquet. You can also find us on channel 628 on OpenView. If you want to keep in touch with us, you can do so via WhatsApp. It's +27 63 406 9126. On Twitter, it's at Channel Africa 1.
Africa of the future.
Africa of the future.
Today on the show, we speak about a seminar aimed at encouraging the youth to get into entrepreneurship, and later we speak about the upcoming elections in Kenya. But first, let's take you across the continent to remind you of stories you may have missed. The rising incidents of ritual killings and kidnappings for ransom in Nigeria have been attributed to failure of government and a drop in African value systems, especially amongst the youth. The issue was ignited by a reported detention of the former Deputy Senate President of Nigeria, Ikwe Ekeremadu, and his wife by police in London on alleged offence of trafficking for the purpose of organ harvesting. Listen to Nigerian lawyer and public affairs analyst Evans Ufeli.
That former Deputy Senate President of Nigeria, Ikwe Ekeremadu, was involved with trafficking a child from Nigeria to the United Kingdom for the purposes of organ harvest. What one can say is to look at the possible implication of what has happened, the possible implication of the fact whether the said donor was aware of the issue in question that he was taken to the UK to do, to whether the necessary consent was granted, and whether there was no coercion, intimidation or whatsoever. But what the United Kingdom government is trying to do is to put them through trial to ensure that there was no legal infraction as to their level of engagement in what has happened so far.
The World Food Programme says 13 million people are in dire need of humanitarian food assistance in northern Ethiopia's three regions, gripped by 19 months of fighting. Listen to WFP representative and country director for Ethiopia, Claude Jibida.
People have been severely affected by the conflict. People have been displaced, they've lost everything. And this is a very, very crucial moment because people are expecting rain. And if people cannot be in the field, if they cannot dedicate the time, energy, resources to take care of the field, then we are headed towards another disaster.
And finally, the Play Movement has launched Siyadlala Siyafunda, a movement which aims to highlight the importance of learning through play here in South Africa. The campaign aims to grow a movement for play by supporting and unlocking play experiences for children worldwide. The movement started in 2019 in Colombia, Rwanda, and Brazil. To listen to South African author, storyteller and director Gcina Mhlophe, who's also ambassador for Siyadlala Siyafunda.
As a person who has always loved doing the creative arts for education, it has been very natural for me to gravitate towards something so special. I run an organization, Gcina Masiko Arts and Heritage Trust, and we do storytelling, we do poetry, we do games, we do all kinds of things. So when I heard that learning through play, having been launched in Colombia, and then in Brazil, then in Rwanda, I thought, when is it coming south? And now it is here in South Africa. And so I'm very excited we launched it in Johannesburg. It means that more and more people are going to be able to be consciously making time to play with their children, with their students, whether it's in primary schools or in ECD centers, the caregivers, the teachers, the different people are going to be consciously looking at play as part and parcel of being creative, of learning, of growing.
And those are some of the stories you may have missed across the continent. We'll take a short break, and on the other side of that, we'll speak to our guest. Stay tuned to Channel Africa, where we continue to give you news, views, and interviews from an African perspective. This is Africa of the Future. Stay with us. We'll be back after this.
Safa sapheli sizwe simnyama.
In South Africa, the youth of 1976 took to the streets to fight for a better education, and the revolution was intensified. Channel Africa remembers the youth of 1976.
Join Channel Africa every Tuesday at 8 a.m. CAT for another informative installment of Africa of the Future. You can find us online at www.channelafrica.co.za or channel 802 on the DStv Audio Bouquet channel. Channel Africa, giving you the African perspective.
Welcome to this life-changing experience. We move a way of no return from seven wonders of the world to the summit of Kilimanjaro. From the statue of Nelson Mandela to the African Renaissance Monument, we break all the boundaries. From the greatest archives of Timbuktu to the deepest oceans and rivers of Africa, we reveal the mysteries. We asking life's biggest questions. We rule the world of esoteric knowledge, from ancient Egypt to fourth industrial revolution. Ladies and gentlemen, Masterclass Africa, Sir Max,
the knowledge premier.
Africa of the Future.
Africa of the Future.
Welcome back to Africa of the Future here on Channel Africa, where we continue to give you news, views, and interviews from an African perspective. My name is Luyanda Maume. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, South Africa's Department of Small Business Development will host the SheTrades Youth Seminar. Through the SheTrades platform, selected women-owned businesses and corporations will benefit from a wide range of opportunities to expand their businesses and broadly advance women economic empowerment. Now, to talk more about this, we are joined on the line by SheTrades Program Specialist at the Small Enterprise Development Agency, that is Leah Sherian. Welcome to Africa of the Future.
Hi, welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. Now, what is SheTrades and what does it look to achieve?
Okay, starting from the basics, the SheTrades program, it is a flagship program of the International Trade Center that reports to the United Nations and World Trade Organization. And the SheTrades program has come to South African soil through the partnership between the International Trade Center, the Department of Small Business Development, and the Small Enterprise Development Agency, known as CEDA. So CEDA is the host institution where the South African SheTrades Hub has been hosted within, and CEDA is responsible to implement the program amongst our female clients, SMMEs, basically.
What type of SMMEs are we talking here when you talk about women-owned SMMEs?
Leander, this program, the fantastic aspect of this program is that we've taken the SheTrades program and we've incorporated it with the export development program that CEDA has. So we want to ensure that all women who've got products and services, who've got a business, who's running a full-time business, who owns 51%, at least 51% ownership of a business, is eligible to be participating in this program. So this program, what it entails is that It actually has three levels, meaning level three being the basic level, that is where your startups and your basic SMMEs come into play. And then once we've assessed and we've done the interventions, and once we see that through the export readiness assessment that is used, we see that you're ready to graduate to level two, we move you into sector-specific trainings, and that's what happens in level two, where we plug you into the manufacturing support program. We've got the DSPD's localization program. We've got the supplier development program, various sector-specific programs. We would like to make partnerships with institutions that we could have in future look at agri programs specifically in the agribusiness. We've got a large number of women who are in the cosmetics industry. So there are various sectors that our women are comprised of, and we would like to make sure that they are tapped into that sector-specific training. And once again, once we see that you are ready to migrate or graduate into level one, that's where the fine-tuning happens, and that's where we do intense mentorship, accelerator programs, coaching, and then we start permeating the local markets. Like within South Africa, we provide access to markets through exhibitions and trade fairs. And once we have seen that you are successful within South Africa, then we look at international markets that we expose you to, and we give opportunities where you can get leads within the global market. So another aspect is that once you come back from these trade fairs, you should be having the knowledge and the know-how as to what are you going to do with these the leads that you're getting. So we need to ensure that we have a post trade fair or a post facilitation opportunity for our clients, where we have we teach you on how to sustain the deals that you've got, and how do you go about your Bureau of Standards and ensuring that you provide quality products that the buyers on the other side will be coming back for more. So that is what the program entails in a nutshell.
What you're telling me is almost at the on a second phase of it, after somebody having gone through the application process and having been accepted as eligible to participate or being taken on board. But take us through the first stage. Somebody who's hearing this about this during this interview while I'm talking to you, who's saying, maybe I want to be a part of this. How do they go about being part of it?
That's the best part of this program. There's no eligibility, or there's no
acceptability criteria, yes.
Accessibility criteria. The basic criteria is you need to have a registered formal business. You need to have at least 51% ownership within your business as a woman, and you should be able to be running the business on a daily basis. If you fall into that criteria, then you go to www.shetrades.com. You register on the page that is provided. You go to your nearest CEDA branch and you inform them that you're part of the SheTrades program, you've registered, and then they will be doing the necessary interventions on you. So what we have done at CEDA is that the first 2 years, meaning 2020-21, was our crucial year where we had done some intense mobilization of the program. So starting from this year, our key focus is to ensure that all the women that have registered on this program, they are being assisted through three levels that I just mentioned, and we are in the process of getting them assessed so that we have all the baseline information, so that we know exactly what we are dealing with, and then the necessary interventions and support programs will be provided for them.
What accommodation has been made for those women who still find themselves outside the digital curtain? Because you're talking about logging onto a website, but we know that South Africa is one of the most unequal societies in the world. But how do you make sure that you also accommodate those women who are based in the rural areas to ensure that they are able to be part of this very, very, very interesting program?
Thank you for that question. That is very important. CEDA is located on a national arena. So we've got 9 provincial offices. We've got over 80 branches located all over South Africa and co-locations. So anybody who does not have access to the internet is able to go to a CEDA branch and liaise with the personnel there, and they would be able to assist you with the registration.
Is there any fee that is paid for somebody to be part of this?
No, it's free of charge. It's a government initiative. It's free of charge to be part of the sheep trade program. The interventions that is conducted, usually with the branches, CEDA pays for almost 90% of the fee, and the client would pay it up to 10%, but that depends on the interventions that are needed within your business. But being part of the sheep trades program, it is free of charge.
Talk to us about the sheep trades ZA hub. What is that?
The sheep trades, each country that the sheep trades is hosting, that is called a hub. So CEDA had to actually undergo quite an intense interview and assessment with the ITC, the International Trade Center, in order for IT to see that we have the capacity and the capability to host the sheep trades program and have a hub here in South Africa. So we underwent an assessment, and through that assessment, they were interviewing us regarding the policies that South Africa has in place, the legal structure, how much is women promoted in South Africa, and even within CEDA structure, I mean, do we have the capacity to have a good network within the country, within provinces, within the district, to be able to reach out to all the SMEs and be able to create an awareness for this program and also be able to assist the women who are in business. So that is how the hub came about. So through the assessment, they score you. And I'm really proud to say that South Africa scored one of the highest in the world in that assessment. And we are one of the most active hubs in the world for sheep trades at the moment. So we've got just over 2,700 women who have registered so far. And now our key focus, like I said, is we want to make sure that we are assisting those women with the needs that they need with regards to their business.
Now, talk to us about the Wednesday youth seminar that is happening on the 29th of June, 2022. Talk to us about that and what you are hoping that the attendees will be able to walk away with from that.
Okay, this is focused on the youth who, and also for women. So it's actually two stones and one bird, or the other way around, one bird and two stones. What we've done is that the minister, our honorable minister, Minister Stella Ndebele Abrahams, will be one of the speakers. We've got the chief executive officer from the National Youth Development Agency, who will also be addressing the group. And then I will be presenting on the Sheep Trade Czar program, meaning I'll highlight how the implementation of the program will be rendered. And along with that, we've got a personnel from the Tswane branch, Ms. Masofa, who will be there to guide you with regards to how to get yourself registered and how will the branch come into play and what are the offerings that they have with regards to assisting the women. So everything that whoever attends the seminar would be able to have the full knowledge with regards to the program. Along with that, the branch offerings, how the branch would be dealing with the client.
And for somebody who catches the latter end of our conversation, who perhaps didn't hear some of the other details that we spoke about earlier on in our conversation, what website can they go to get more information about this?
It's www.shetrades.com. And once you've registered, please go to www.seda.org.za, that is CEDA's website, where you can find the nearest branch, and you go to your nearest branch and the personnel will be assisting you further.
Leah, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us here on Channel Africa.
It's only a pleasure, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
That is SHE Trades Program Specialist at the Small Enterprise Development Agency here in South Africa, and we'll take a short break. And on the other side of that, we continue with the show. You're still with Africa of the Future here on Channel Africa, where we continue to give you news, views, and interviews from an African perspective. Remember, if you want to keep in touch with us, you can do so via WhatsApp. It's +27634069126. On Twitter, it's at Channel Africa, the numerical one, Channel Africa one there. This is Africa of the Future. My name is Luyanda Mamewe. We'll be back after this. Stay with us.
The road to freedom is paved with struggle, indifference, harrowing stories, and most of all, the hopes and dreams of a people. Channel Africa remembers the youth of 1976.
Change Your Game is a weekly entrepreneurial program that targets entrepreneurs, especially youth, on the African continent.
Last year, Google named me as one of the brightest young minds in the world.
The program seeks to portray various opportunities and options that are available for entrepreneurs.
I came up with the way for the world not to pass.
It focuses and highlights real issues concerning entrepreneurship.
There are so many people whose potential is still untapped.
At Change Your Game, we believe entrepreneurs are the key drivers of tomorrow's African innovations and essential to creating a thriving African economy. Channel Africa, the African perspective.
Africa of the future.
Africa of the future.
Welcome back to Africa of the Future. You're listening to Channel Africa, where we continue to give you news, views, and interviews from an African perspective. My name is Luya Damaume. Now, with Kenya going into the election, we revisit a conversation we had on the show about the practice of using state resources to fund candidacy for elections. And listen to this conversation I had with Transparency International Kenya's Executive Director, Sheila Masinde, who started by telling us how much and how prevalent the practice of using state resources in election campaigns is.
Electoral malpractices have been a common occurrence during elections in Kenya. The use of public resources has been witnessed in elections even before the advent of multi-party politics in Kenya more than 30 years ago. The Independent Review Commission on the General Elections held in Kenya on 27th of December 2007, popularly known as the Krigler Commission, reported that the use of state resources in partisan campaigns was witnessed in that disputed election of 2007. And this took the form of, you know, high-ranking state officers and public servants campaigning publicly, you know, use of government vehicles and aircraft and other, you know, state apparatus, state machinery and state resources, and even use of, you know, constituency development funds for the campaigns. 10 years later, in 2017, in the 2017 elections, we saw widespread use of state resources through the form of, you know, government vehicles being used to and from the campaigns, cabinet secretaries and other state officers, civil servants taking part in the campaigns, use of security forces, particularly to intimidate, especially in the opposition areas as well, use of, you know, state buildings, state grounds, you know, even the use of state house and other state premises, you know, being used to host political meetings. So this is quite prevalent, I would say, in the Kenyan election campaigns.
Now, you have launched a campaign called Campaign Watch, which is a platform that collects, you know, reports from the public on the use of state resources during campaigns, especially for the 2022 general elections and beyond. Tell us a little bit about how this mechanism works.
So the Campaign Watch is an online platform that will enable citizens to be able to file reports, post photographic or videographic evidence on the use of state resources during campaign events. And so it's an online portal that Kenyans can be able to log into and then file their reports. And then on our end, we'll be able to monitor and pick this report. And we intend to work with state agencies, you know, responsible for dealing with such issues. You know, for instance, the Independent Electoral Boundaries Commission, the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission, the Ombudsman, that's the Commission on Administrative Justice, and even the Office of the Director of Public Prosecutions, because all these institutions have a mandate in regard to the use of state resources in the election campaigns. So we intend to give these reports to them so they can use them as evidence and then firmly take action against perpetrators. Because as I've said, there's been a prevalence of using state resources in Kenya to finance political campaigns, despite provisions in the law which outlaw the use of state resources. But then again, despite this, there's really been little action that has been taken against people who have abused state machinery, state apparatus, state resources to campaign. So we hope that with this evidence, photographic, videographic, and other forms of evidence and reports that have been filed by citizens, then the relevant state institutions, state actors would then be able to take firm action so that we can then be able to curb impunity. Yeah, we also wanted to create an avenue and platform for citizens to also be able to call for accountability and to demand for electoral integrity just by being able to report politicians and other people who are illicitly using state resources to fund campaigns so that we can end this, because our concern also is that when we subvert state resources to be used in the campaigns, then it means that it comes at a price for citizens. It means that we are compromising the service delivery to Kenyans, because those resources are there to serve Kenyans. When vehicles are being used in the campaigns instead of being used to serve Kenyans, for instance, security vehicles are being used in the campaigns instead of being used to help Kenyans who are facing crime or other instances where they need police help, that is a great price that then citizens have to pay. You know, when a state officer is busy campaigning instead of being on the ground helping citizens and serve them, then it also comes at a disservice. I think it's also critical at this time to have this kind of platform, because our economy hasn't performed well, of course, coupled with the effects of COVID-19. So we need to ensure that our state resources are insulated against abuse, so that instead of being abused and being used in elections, they're actually deployed to serve Kenyans and to serve their intended purposes.
Now, Ms. Masinde, what often happens is that to combat corruption of any kind will rely on whistleblowers. But this fight is often compromised by poor protection that is afforded to those who dare to report. How then do we ensure that people who come up and provide this information are protected at all times?
Yeah, indeed. Whistleblowers in Kenya have historically faced retaliation. We've seen people who have risked life and limb to report corruption, you know, being harassed, dismissed from employment or demoted. And some of them faced actual threats and violence. And some have lost their lives. So because of this, many Kenyans stay away from reporting corruption, since many feel that nothing will be done, even if they reported it. In fact, in our last Kenya Bribery Index published last year, we found that only 13% of Kenyans who witnessed corruption dared to report it. The rest, 87%, didn't dare to, because they feared victimization, they feared acts of reprisal or intimidation. And the other reason, again, is why people don't report is also because they don't know where to report it. But we largely have not had a comprehensive legislation and policy or institutional framework for the protection of whistleblowers. And that then serves as a deterrent to the promotion of whistleblowing. So I believe also that having this platform as a campaign watch helps to promote reporting of corruption and the use abuse of state resources, because in a confidential manner, because it will allow Kenyans to report anonymously, because that's one of the worries that Kenyans have, that you report something and then the next thing someone is after you. So I think these kinds of platforms are really important, even in terms of protecting and promoting whistleblowing, even as we advocate further for a law and a comprehensive law and policy and institutional framework.
As Kenya is going to be a highly contested presidential election that involves the country's two most powerful men, which is the president Uhuru Kenyatta and his deputy William Ruto, obviously this makes the stakes very high, and there's likely that no resources will be spared to win the hearts and minds of Kenyans. What have you learned thus far?
These elections, as with other elections that have been held in Kenya, are looking to be very highly competitive, because of the amount of money that the presidency attracts, and also the perception that once one is in that office, you know, they have overall access to new resources. And this means that candidates or people are willing to go to any length to use money during the campaigns due to the benefits that they will access when they win. So it's not even about the salary that one gets once you get into office. It's more just about the access to power, access to resources and decisions that one then has that is more attractive. Obviously, because of this, it means that it is cutthroat competition to get this seat. in the 2017 general elections, candidates incurred an average of 35.5 million to run for the Senate seats, 22.8 to contest for the women representative seats, in the National Assembly, 18.2 million for the Member of Parliament, this is in Kenya shillings, and this according to a report of the cost of politics in Kenya by Zalendo Trust, South Consulting and Westminster Foundation. And this just tells you the amount of money then one is expected to have. And then you then ask yourself whether it is an election or an auction, because it almost means that the person, the highest bidder, the one who is able to amass the highest level of resources, is the one then who gets this position. In fact, that report goes on to say that people who lost the elections, you know, spent less than those who spent more, meaning that you then need more money to be able to win a seat in the Kenyan election. So you can imagine how cutthroat the presidency will be if that competition is at that lower level. So we expect a highly competitive election, and that is why for us the issues around integrity, around transparency and accountability are really, really critical, because the risk that then one who doesn't meet the standards of integrity as expected in this country would then be able to access office, because they have access to money, even if it's not clean, are very high, because it is in this kind of cutthroat competitive elections where the corrupt will thrive, because they will spare no resources to be able to access a public office. And that is why we are really calling for the regulation of campaign financing, and also calling for vetting of individuals seeking office, so that to ensure that the process towards the election is clean and the outcome is clean and the people who are elected are clean as per the standards set by our Constitution of Kenya.
Now, speaking of regulating campaign financing, one would have thought that perhaps legislation is the best way to regulate the issue of election party funding. Has there been efforts to get such a legislation promulgated?
Kenya currently has a legislation to regulate election campaign financing. We have what we call the Election Campaign Financing Act, which was enacted in 2013, but unfortunately, it was not immediately operationalized. Its operationalization was postponed to the 2017 elections. And then in 2017, what happened is that the regulations, which are supposed to effect or to help the enable the operationalization of that law, were not passed. And so that law was once again deferred to the next election, which is next year, 2022. So currently, even as we speak, yesterday, MPs voted to repeal the regulations, which had been submitted by the Independent Electoral Boundaries Commission. So currently, as we speak, we have a law, but it has not been operationalized, because it doesn't have. So currently what has happened is that the last elections were held without a legal regime to regulate the use of campaign money or regulate, you know, election funding. So without those regulations, then it really becomes difficult to implement it. But then Parliament has also been reluctant to pass those regulations. And so in that gap, then that means that we have a law, but it's pretty much on paper. And that is really the tragedy of our attempts to regulate election campaign financing, because our politicians, who would, I guess, be regulated by it, have an interest in it, and they don't want to be regulated. They don't want to be held accountable in regards to who are their sources of election campaign funding. You know, how much are they receiving from these sources, and how are they spending this money? You know, no one wants to be held accountable for that. And so, of course, here there's a conflict of interest, because then they will keep. In fact, our fear is that they will keep pending the operationalization of this legislation in perpetuity. You know, because they don't want to be held accountable, or they don't want to be limited in terms of how they get their money and how much is it and how they use it. Our concerns also as well is because a lot of politicians may also be relying on public resources to campaign, and no one wants to be held accountable or be caught, you know, with their hand in the cookie jar, you know, using public resources for their campaigns. The other angle to it is that there are also concerns that a lot of dirty money is being pumped into the elections campaign spending. And so no one wants to be asked questions, because you don't want to publicly state that the monies that you're using for your campaigns are the proceeds of crime, wildlife crime, drug trafficking, human trafficking, money laundering, corruption, and so on, you know. So obviously the politicians have an interest to keep this law at bay so that they can continue to spend, you know, fundraise and spend as they wish in the campaigns.
Listen, Sheila, let me thank you for taking time to talk to us here on Africa of the Future. All the best with your work.
Thank you very much.
Africa of the Future.
Africa of the Future.
And that is Transparency International's Kenya Executive Director Sheila Masinde. And that's how we come to the end of this week's installment of the show. And it is our final show of the season, or in fact, it's our final show, really. And with that, let me say that it has been my absolute honor to serve you. And thank you so much for joining us for very, very, very enriching conversation. Your Econ and Sport is up next. Stay tuned for that and more here on Channel Africa as we continue to give you news, views and interviews from an African perspective. And for the last time, my name is Luyanda Maume and I'm out.
Kandisene, kandisene, ulonge.